and jostled her shoulder. "Hey, Tom," I called out as we approached the house. I didn't want to get shot at by dropping by to see a neighbor. The front door opened, and the long barrel of a shotgun slid out of the crack. Behind it, I could see a figure, but couldn't make out the face. "Hey, Tom," I said with a wave, and waited for him to realize it was me. After a moment, the door opened, and Tom stepped out on the small porch, closing the door behind him. He set the butt of the shotgun on the deck, holding it by the barrel. "Hi, Morgan." He was sporting a full beard and looked thin. His clothes were hanging from him. We walked up to him, stopping at the foot of the steps to the small deck. "Hey, Tom. Taylor wanted to visit with Renee. She around?" He shuffled his feet a couple of times and said, "Yeah, she's here. It'd probably do her good to see Taylor. Go on in. She's in her room." Tom opened the door and Taylor bounded up the stairs. After she was in, he shut the door again. "Is she all right?" I asked. His lips began to quiver a bit. A tear ran down his cheek. "Oh, no, she's not well. You know, she was always so thin, and I think she's starving to death. She's so weak and can't hardly stand up without getting lightheaded." His voice cracked as he talked. "You guys out of food?" He huffed. "Well, we've been out of food for weeks. We've been eating the horse feed." "Didn't you go to the community meals that Mark put on, the food from the county?" The shame he felt was obvious. He couldn't look at me. "No. I was embarrassed for everyone to know I couldn't take care of my family. And now Renee is so sick. Can I see her?" Tom looked up and wiped his eyes, then sniffled. "Yeah, come on in." He opened the door and we went in. Taylor was sitting beside Renee in her bed. She looked horribly thin. Taylor looked like she was about to cry. I grabbed Tom by the arm and walked out of the room. Once we were in the living room, I told him I was going home to get some things for him, for her. He protested, saying he couldn't take anything from me, and I snapped, "This isn't a fucking offer. Do you see her? I mean, do you really see her? I have 2 12-packs of Ensure at home. I'm going to get those, and you're going to start pouring that into her. I'll get you some other food for her, too, for you, and your wife, too, and you'll eat it. You got it?" He was crying openly now, nodding his head. Renee's mom was sitting on the couch. She was crying, too. And just like Tom and Renee, she was sickly thin. I left the house and jogged back home. Chapter 25. When Thad finished, he slid his ass forward in the chair and leaned back. At this point, he just didn't give a shit what happened. Captain Taylor had listened to Thad's story with great interest, occasionally making notes on a little pad. When Thad relaxed, Taylor rocked back in his chair, lifting the front legs off the ground and cupping his hands behind his head. He sucked his teeth for a minute, looking intently at Thad. "Thad, if I cut those cuffs off you, are you going to give me any trouble?" Without moving, Thad replied, "Not a bit." Taylor stood up and walked around the table, motioning for Thad to stand. Thad stood up and heard the click of the flex cuffs being cut. He rubbed his wrists and rolled his shoulders against the stiffness they had caused. His elbow was particularly uncomfortable, and he pulled his shirt sleeve up and looked at it. Taylor looked over and said, "That doesn't look so good. What happened?" Thad told him about the shootout at the house. He didn't tell him about executing the girl. He didn't want to remember it, and damn sure didn't want to tell anyone else about it. "Tell you what, walk with me over to the tent with the medics, and let them look at it, and I'll get you something to eat. You hungry?" Thad hadn't thought about food in a long time, and until Taylor mentioned it, he didn't realize how hungry he was. Now he was starving. He nodded and followed Taylor out of the tent. They walked through a series of tents. The path between them was lit with those little solar landscape lights. Thad made a mental note of that. It could come in handy later. Taylor stepped into another tent, and Thad followed him. Inside, there was an examination table in the center, with tables and shelves around the sides. Medical supplies were stacked up everywhere, and 2 paramedics sat in a couple of folding camp chairs in the light of a Coleman lantern. Guys, Thad here has a bullet wound I'd like you to look at, Taylor said, pointing to Thad's arm. The two men stood up and asked Thad to sit on the edge of the table. He did, and they started the process of exposing his arm. When one of them reached for his shears, Thad told him to wait and stripped out of his shirt. He didn't have many. They asked him the usual questions, and he answered them as best he could. When they asked what caliber it was, he said he didn't know if it was a bullet fragment or a piece of a Ford. The wound was infected. The two medics cleaned it, a painful process that Thad endured without complaint, and then dressed the wound. After asking if he was allergic to any medications and being told no, they gave him a bottle of penicillin and told him to take it 3 times a day. Thad said he would and turned to leave. Taylor was gone, so Thad stepped out after thanking the medics. Back outside, he looked around and heard a voice call him from behind. He saw Taylor waving at him from the flap of another tent and walked that way. Taylor held the flap open and Thad walked in. There was a long table on one side, full of big silver trays, typical of a buffet. Under each one sat a can of Sterno, the blue flame licking at the bottom. This tent was lit with some lights, the kind from a construction site. Little yellow cages strung out on a cord. Taylor pushed Thad toward the tables. Other people, mostly in uniforms, were sitting at other tables in rows inside the tent, eating. Most didn't even take notice of him. Thad picked a paper plate and went through the line. There were scrambled eggs, institutional-grade bacon, but still bacon, potatoes, and a big vat of grits. Thad filled his plate and took a cup of orange juice and looked for a place to sit. Taylor was right behind him and guided him to a table with two men sitting at it. They took the two free seats and sat down. Thad set to work on his plate immediately. The other three men chatted amongst themselves while Thad ate, and he paid them no mind. Thad's big elbows were on the edge of the table, and his head hung over his plate. After his second trip through the serving line, Thad dropped his fork onto the plate and finally sat back. "Damn! I guess you was hungry," Taylor said. Thad patted his belly. "Guess so." "When was the last time you ate anything?" one of the other men asked. Thad glanced away and said, "It'd been a while." "Thad, I'd like you to meet Sheriff Billy Holland," Taylor said, nodding his head toward one of the other two men at the table. Thad looked at him. He didn't look like a sheriff. He looked like everyone else around here. He wore the same BDU-style pants, black t-shirt, and sheriff's jacket that they all wore. Thad looked at him and said, "Nice to meet you, Sheriff." The sheriff nodded and sat there looking at Thad for a minute before glancing at the man beside him. The other man just raised his eyebrows and went back to swirling the coffee in his cup. "Thad, Captain Taylor tells me you had a run-in with the DHS. That true?" "I wouldn't say I had a run-in, but my wife and boy did." "That's what I heard. And I also heard what you did about it. Was all that true?" "Every last word." The sheriff nodded his head. "Well, I'm sorry for your loss. I only wish you had made it here sooner. Lake County will not be taking any shit off any federal acronym." "That's nice to know, Sheriff. If I can do anything to help, just let me know." "Far as I'm concerned, we ain't even yet," Thad said. "Where were you heading?" the sheriff asked. "I was heading to a friend's house. We walked together for a long ways when we was trying to get home. He's the only person around here that I know now." "You walked home? From where?" Captain Taylor asked. Thad spent the next few minutes telling the story of his trip home and all the things he and Morgan had been through. When he finished, the three men looked at one another, then back at Thad. "Where's your friend live, and who is he?" Taylor asked. "The address is on a piece of paper in the front seat of the truck. It's somewhere in Altoona. His name is Morgan, and he's a good man." The sheriff looked at Taylor and motioned with his head. Taylor got up and left the tent. The sheriff went to the serving line and returned with 2 cups of coffee, handing one to Thad. "Thanks." "No problem. Your friend, his last name Carter?" the sheriff asked. Thad nodded. Thad, this quiet guy over here is Captain Hall. He's head of the jail. Thad nodded to Hall as he took a sip of the coffee, and Hall did likewise. It wasn't long before Taylor reappeared with a slip of paper and handed it to the sheriff, who looked at it and handed it back. Thad, under our current situation, I'm having to confiscate all running vehicles. One as useful as yours would be a big help to us right now. But where you're going, there are a couple of our men there. If I was to let you leave with the truck, would you turn it over to them when you got to where you were going? Thad sat thinking for a minute, staring down into his cup. He wasn't sure what the hell was going on here. Were they actually going to let him drive out of here? If they did, he would turn the truck over, no big deal to him. He just wanted to get to Morgan's house. After draining the cup, he set it down and said, "Sheriff, I've been an honest man my whole life. I've never taken anything from anyone, and I always provided for my family. I don't have a family now. All I have now are a couple of friends, and at this point, all I want to do is get to them. If you let me drive over there, I'll be happy to turn the truck over to your folks." The sheriff said, "Well, all right then." Thad pulled out onto Highway 19 and couldn't stop smiling. He had a letter, on Lake County Sheriff's Office letterhead no less, that made sure he would get to where he was going. That they had taken the M4 and the tactical vest was an even trade in his mind. He reached over and picked up the hand-drawn map that Taylor had given him, and again he smiled and shook his head. Thad kept an eye out for Lakeshore Drive. They had said it was the fastest way to Morgan's house. Lakeshore was closer than he expected, and he made the left on it without having to wait for the light. This was just getting better and better. Thad enjoyed the ride along Lake Eustace. It was a huge lake, and the road wound its way along the shore under a canopy of oak trees. On the right, there were some large houses that faced the lake to his left. Thad looked at those big houses and wondered about the people that lived in them, what they did to make all that money, and what they were doing now. As Thad crested the bridge over the canal for the boat ramp, he slammed on the brakes. Sitting in front of him, in the middle of the road, were two Humvees. On the road, on either side, were sandbag emplacements. In each of these, there was a machine gun mounted, and both of them were pointed at him. "Shit," Thad thought, as he slapped the steering wheel. Several men were approaching the old scout with their weapons raised. They ordered him to put his hands up, and with no other choice, he did as instructed. As the uniformed men approached, they ordered him out of the truck, and he again complied. Two men on the other side opened the passenger door and looked in. "Clear!" one of them called out. A man that Thad assumed was in charge of the operation came up, holding his M4 across his chest, as the two men who had ordered him out were searching him. "He's clean, LT," one of them said. "Where are you headed?" the lieutenant asked. "Just trying to get to my buddy's house." One of the men from the passenger side came around the truck and handed the lieutenant a piece of paper. He read it, then looked at Thad and handed it back to the soldier that brought it. "The sheriff give you that?" Thad nodded his head. The lieutenant stared at Thad for a moment, as if he were searching him for some sign of deceit. After a long moment, he called over his shoulder, "Find anything in there?" One of the men searching the truck replied, "He's got some guns and shit. Nothing major, though." The LT pointed at the truck. "You can get back in." Thad climbed in and shut the door. The lieutenant walked up and said, "Let me see your pass there," and held out his hand. Thad handed it over and watched as the lieutenant took out his pen and made a note on it, then handed it back. "There's another checkpoint you'll have to go through on the other side of town. Just show them this. I'll let them know you're coming, and they won't give you any trouble. If the sheriff says you're good to go, that's enough for me." Thad gave the men a nod, and the lieutenant stepped back and waved at his men. "Let him through!" It was early morning, the sun was up, and it was still a little chilly out. Downtown Eustace had a mix of business and residential areas, all intermingled. As he drove down the quiet street, Thad didn't see any people. It was eerily quiet. He drove by the post office, then past the little strip mall. As he was negotiating a curve in the road, he again had to stop abruptly. In the road ahead was another roadblock. This time, the men manning it didn't instantly raise their weapons. One of them simply walked out to the scout. Thad waited for the soldier to approach and held up the pass. "Morning," the soldier said, as he came up to the window. "Morning," Thad replied. The soldier looked at the pass with a quick glance. "LT said you were coming. Where you heading?" "To my buddy's place in Altoona." The soldier stood there for a minute, looking at the truck. "How'd you manage to hang on to this old relic?"
"Just lucky, I guess."
"Well, good luck."
As the soldier started to leave, Thad asked, "Is there any trouble up ahead?"
The soldier turned back.
"Nah, not really. It's pretty quiet around here as far as we know. The farther you get from here, the less we know, though, so be careful."
According to the map Taylor had given him, it was a straight shot up 19 to Morgan's place. Thad made it to Umatilla in only a few minutes. There were a few people out, but not many. At the McDonald's, he passed two men on horseback, and they stared at him as hard as he did them. Before, it had been an oddity to see people on horseback in the middle of the road. Now it was odd to see a moving car. It was as if some rift in time and space had opened up and two peculiarities were brought face to face for just an instant. Thad made it through town and continued down the road. After winding his way through the small hills on the north side of town, he saw the sign for Altoona. Picking up his map, he saw his next reference point was Highway 42. Just a moment after putting the paper down, he saw the three little stores that marked the intersection of the two roads. The parking lot of the Big Kangaroo store looked like a flea market. Makeshift tables had been set up, and people were setting up their wares for the day's trading. The one thing that caught his attention was the two men in full camo holding rifles. He watched as one reached out and grabbed the other, pointing at Thad and his scout. Thad kept his eyes on the two men as he passed them, and they also kept their eyes on him, talking between themselves and motioning toward the truck. In short order, he passed the store, and as he passed the fire station, Thad checked the mirror for the two men, but they weren't there. Thad noticed the field on the left, just where Taylor said it would be, and he slowed the scout, looking to the right side for the road sign. There was a barricade with armed men behind it, and they were looking at him. Mike was firing his M4 at the helo that was coming straight at them, but with the bouncing, he probably wasn't coming close to it. Captain Lewis was still leaning on the cab, looking wide-eyed as the gunner raised the weapon to his shoulder. Doc, with his foot to the floor, was leaning over the wheel to look up at the approaching bird. Sarge was lying on his back, firing over the cab. His rounds, too, were probably ineffective. When the gunner opened up and the first rounds passed over the truck, Mike began to scream, a guttural, primal growl. Flipping his weapon to full auto, he held the trigger back. The first 30mm round passed through the rear compartment of the helo, coming in on the gunner's side and going out the other. The men in the truck watched as he jerked his head to the right and fumbled for the mic button for his intercom. He wasn't fast enough, though, as the gunner in the Apache let loose a 6-round burst that slammed into the engine compartment and tail boom of the ship. The guys in the truck watched as the helo folded, found its way into the blades, and exploded into a blur of flying metal. As the helo spiraled to the ground, the gunner was flung out of the spinning ship. Mike and Sarge looked on as the man was spun around the falling ship from the end of his safety lanyard. The Apache roared overhead and behind the tumbling aircraft, then made a hard turn and raced to catch up to the other one that was chasing the second DHS bird. Shouts and cheers erupted from the bed of the truck as the flaming wreckage of the helo landed in the trees to the right of the road.
"Raven, 2-2, stump knocker."
Lewis grabbed his mic, and over the rush of wind and banging of the truck, he replied,
"Go for stump knocker."
"Stump knocker, we have you in sight. Looks like there's a clearing about half a click ahead of you that we can get into if you want us to."
"Roger that, Raven 2-2. See if you can fit, and we'll rendezvous there."
"Roger. Raven's inbound."
Lewis slapped the roof of the truck
and leaned around to the driver's door and told Doc to look for the clearing. As he was talking, the Black Hawk roared overhead. A clearing opened up on the left side of the road, and Doc pulled off. As the Black Hawk flared for a landing, the other orbited the LZ to provide cover. Everyone bailed out of the truck before it came to a complete stop, and were getting their gear together. Sarge was handing Pelican cases out to be loaded up. Captain Lewis looked at Sarge and said, "We don't need any of that. Let's get aboard," he shouted above the roar of the Black Hawk. "We may not need it, but I do. It's going." Sarge made sure all of his radios, as well as all of their weapons, were loaded up and asked for an incendiary grenade. No one had one. Lewis asked, "What do you want it for?" Sarge pointed at the truck. "Burn it!" They all hopped into the Black Hawk, and it lifted off. The crew chief was scanning the tree line for threats, swinging the GE minigun back and forth as he did. Sarge tapped the gunner on the shoulder. Pointing down at the truck, Sarge keyed the mic for the intercom and said again, "Burn it!" The gunner looked at Captain Lewis, who nodded, and the gunner lined up on the old Dodge and fired a short burst, missing the truck, but quickly adjusting his aim, and rounds began pouring into the truck. The other gunner, seeing the stream of red tracers spewing out of the other ship, began to fire on it as well. It wasn't long before the truck was burning, the sheer number of rounds hitting it, setting it on fire. Sarge sat there, looking out the open door at the fireworks. It was a bittersweet moment for him. On the one side, the damn DHS wasn't going to get his beloved old Dodge, but on the other side, he was losing it. Ted kicked Sarge's boot, and when he looked over, Ted nodded out the door. Off the starboard side of the Black Hawk, they could see the two Apaches coming up in formation with them. Sarge looked back at Ted and smiled, and Ted gave him a thumbs up. Chapter 26. Running with a weapon slung around your neck is a pain in the ass. I'm not an airborne ranger, and I don't want to be one. I had just rounded the corner onto my road when I saw an ATV start heading my way from the barricade. It was quickly gaining speed, and I can see it was Reggie. He came past me in a blur, not even waving. I had to stop and stare at him. There was a person lying across the seat in front of him, and while I couldn't see the head as it was hanging off the other side, what I did see was that the feet were bound. I stood there looking at him as he sped down the road, slowing just enough to negotiate the corner onto his road. "What the fuck is that all about?" I wondered. At the moment, though, I had other shit to do and headed for the house. As I came in the gate, Meathead met me and followed me back to the shop. I was pretty out of breath when I jerked the door open. Jeff jumped and let out a howl, shaking his thumb, then sticking it in his mouth, and dropping the soldering iron he had in his other hand. He looked at me, with his thumb still in his mouth. "A boom, a boom!" "Sorry about that," I replied, still breathing hard. He watched me as I crossed the shop and started to pull cartons from the shelves. I grabbed the two packages of Ensure, then started looking for other stuff to take them. I was thinking high calorie and high protein. Grabbing an empty box, I threw in a jar of peanut butter, a few cans of sardines and tomato sauce, the big ones, and a few cans of beans, a couple cans of spinach, canned corn, green beans, a couple of packs of spaghetti noodles, and two cans of sauce. All of this stuff I had a lot of, thank God for Aldi and Save-A-Lot. "What the hell are you doing?" I heard Jeff say, his thumb now out of his mouth. "One of our neighbors has a daughter who is starving to death, and he's too damn proud to ask for help." He raised his eyebrows. "Oh, need any help?" "Nah. How's that going?" Jeff looked back at the bench. "It's almost done. It should work fine. It was easy. I'm going back over and dropping this off. Then I have other shit to do. I'll be back later." "Cool. I'll be in here probably. That laptop needs some work. Do you even know what a disk cleanup is, or how to defrag a hard drive?" I looked at him kind of wide-eyed. "You mean you can do that?" Jeff pressed his lips together and gave the finger. I took my box out and put it on the cart. Meathead was sniffing the box, and I pushed him with my knee.
Get out of there, Nosy.
That made me think, and I looked at the box. While you couldn't see into it, unless you were standing over it, someone might be out walking around, and it wouldn't take a rocket scientist to start wondering what was so heavy in the box that I needed a cart. I pulled it over to the woodshed and piled on the wood to cover the box. It didn't take much, and I'd leave that with Tom, too. At the gate, I had to push Meathead back in and close it behind me to keep him from following. At Tom's house, I pulled the cart up close to the porch and carried the box inside. I took out the insure and handed it to Tom's wife. Take these and mix them with water, half and half, for a couple of days. Don't give her too much at a time. Take it slow at first. She nodded and carried the case into the kitchen. I followed her with the box and set it on a small table. Tom came in and looked into the box. He started setting the items out on the table. Tom's wife came over and watched as he unloaded the box, and both of them started to tear up. Tom looked up at me.
I don't know what to say. There's no way I can repay you for this.
It isn't much, but it's all I can do, and I can't give you any more, understand? He nodded and looked at the table again. Tom's wife left the kitchen with a cup of the insure for Renee. Tom and I followed her back to the room and stood in the hall, watching, as Renee slowly sipped the mixture. I caught Taylor's eye and motioned for her to come out. She came out into the hall, and we walked out into the living room. I've got some stuff I need to do. You want to hang out here while I do it, or do you want to come down to Danny's with me? Without hesitation, she replied, I want to stay here. Okay. Stay here until I come get you. Don't walk home alone, and don't talk about how things are at home, got it? She nodded, and I continued, If anyone asks anything, we are just as hungry as they are, and things are just as bleak. Got it? Again, she nodded. I gave her a kiss on the top of her head. All right, I'll be back later. She turned and headed back into Renee's room. I didn't see anyone else on the way to Danny's. The quiet gave me time to think about Reggie and what the hell he was up to this morning. Who was on that ATV and why? I opened Danny's door as I knocked on it. They were sitting at the bar in the kitchen, eating oatmeal for breakfast.
What's up?
I called out as I came through the door.
Hey, man, what's up?
Danny asked.
Wanted to see if we could press your carpenter skills into service.
He stuck a spoonful of goo in his mouth.
Sure. What do we need to build?
A set of stocks.
Bobby looked over. A set of what?
Stocks, you know, like from the Middle Ages. I mimicked the position, holding my hands up near my ears.
What in the hell do we need that for?
Last night a kid was caught stealing chickens. The people called Mark over and wanted him to shoot the kid. Naturally, Mark wouldn't do it. But what else can we do? Then Mark mentioned it as a joke, and I said it was a good idea, so here I am.
Makes sense. We need something other than execution. Let me finish this and we'll see what we can do.
We found enough 4x4s and 2x6s at Danny's to put something together. But neither of us knew the first thing about building stocks. We leaned against the bench under the covered parking area and sketched some ideas out on a scrap piece of paper. After several variations and still no real idea of how to go about it, Danny said, I wish the damn internet were still up. Then we'd know what the damn things are supposed to look like.
If the internet were still up, we wouldn't need them, I replied.
Danny let out a little laugh and shook his head. The sound of a four-wheeler coming up the road caught our attention. Hearing them wasn't really anything remarkable these days. There were enough of them on our street alone, but it was coming up fast. We looked out toward the road and saw Reggie hauling ass on the other side of Danny's fence. He stopped at the gate and hopped off. We walked out toward him as he came jogging up. When he got to us, he stopped and leaned over, resting his palms on his knees and heaving.
You gonna make it? I asked.
Reggie turned his head enough to see me and gave me the finger, and Danny laughed.
There's someone at the barricade asking for you, he said.
Who is it?
Reggie finally straightened up.
Some big-ass black dude.
Thad sat in the truck weighing his options. After all, this was his destination, whether the men at the barricade knew it or not. The two men, one was really a boy, not more than 15, looked at him nervously. Both had rifles, and while they weren't pointed at him, they certainly weren't welcoming. Thad opened the door and slowly stepped out, making sure he kept his hands where they could see them. The two of them immediately stepped back behind the log structure and clutched their rifles a little tighter. Once Thad was out of the truck, one of them called out, "What can we do for you?" With his hands still where they could see them, Thad replied, "Is this where Morgan Carter lives?" The two men shared an uncertain glance and whispered between themselves. As they were talking, Thad heard a four-wheeler. The two men looked over their shoulders as another man, much larger than these two, pulled up on a quad. The big fella sat there for a minute, looking at Thad. He climbed off the machine and walked over to his companions, and they spoke in low whispers for a minute. As they did, the big guy would look over at Thad, neither with aggression or invitation. Thad started to wonder if he had the wrong street. After a few moments of hushed conversation, the big guy walked out toward the road.
"You looking for Morgan?"
"Yeah," Thad replied.
"You a friend of his?"
"Yes, I am. Is he still here?" The big fella looked Thad over for a second.
"You mind waiting here for a minute or two?"
"Not a bit. I'll be right here," Thad said, and sat on the hood, resting his feet on the front bumper of the Scout. The big guy whispered a few words to the other two men, then climbed up on his quad and raced away. Thad sat there, as the other two watched him. Thad listened as the ATV went a short distance and stopped. After a brief pause, it started up again, and he listened as it faded away.
"Morgan, your ass better be here," Thad thought.
Reggie took me to the barricade, and there was Thad, sitting on the hood of an old SUV of some kind, made long before the term SUV was ever thought of. He saw us coming and stepped down off the hood. A surge of happiness ran through me. I hadn't seen him in a while, and it was damn good to see him. Reggie stopped at the barricade, and I climbed off before he could. Reggie said, "You know this guy?" motioning at Thad. The other two guys at the barricade looked at me expectantly, and then Danny pulled up and shut his Polaris down. I looked at Thad.
"Nah, never seen him before."
Thad smiled.
"Nice to see you too."
We met just in front of the barricade and shook hands. He had that ever-present smile on his face, but there was something lurking under it too, something dark.
"Damn, I'm glad to see you," I said,
then looked past him at the old truck. "Are Anita and your son in there?" Not seeing anyone, I looked back at him. His face said it all.
"Come on, let's go up to the house. Leave the truck there for now."
I asked one of the guys to pull the truck in behind the barricade, then introduced Thad to everyone. Reggie was still giving him a bit of the stink eye, so I said,
"You guys heard about when I got shot in the head, right? Thad's the one who carried me out."
That cleared the air, and Reggie stepped over to shake Thad's hand. Danny rode beside us as we walked to the house. I didn't pry into what had happened, and Thad wasn't offering. He mainly told me about how it had been when he was trying to get home, about a block being dropped on him from an overpass, and about killing a man in front of the man's son. Thad told us about how the boy had walked over and kicked his old man in the ribs, then spit on him as he lay there dying. Apparently, the guy hadn't been a good father or husband. He told us about some raccoons that had gotten in the back of the truck and had scared the shit out of him. But then we were at the gate, and I opened it so Danny could go through. As Danny pulled through the gate, Meathead came running up, his tail wagging, and then he saw Thad. I'd never seen a dog do a double take, then backpedal, but he did just that, all the while barking his ass off. Thad smiled and said,
"I think your dog's a racist. He got a hood and shit like that?"
"He used to, but I got tired of washing the sheets. Never mind him, I think he's retarded."
"Him or his owner?" Thad said.
Danny laughed, and I had to smile. I said,
"Hey, I resent that remark."
Mel was in the kitchen when we got to the house.
"Hey, babe."
"This is Thad.
He's the guy I told you about.
Mel leaned against the counter, looking at him.
Well, you're not the little blonde who shot him in the head.
Thad smiled. No, ma'am. I'm the big black one that drug his ass out.
She smiled and walked over to him. She said, Well, thank you for getting him home, and reached up and wrapped her arms around his neck. He had to lean over so she could hug him. She said, Thad, would you like some coffee?
Oh, yes, ma'am, if it isn't any trouble.
Mel poured coffee as Thad, Danny, and I sat down at the table. She carried his cup over and set it in front of him, and he thanked her. Danny and I looked at her, expectantly. Pointing at Danny, she said, You don't drink coffee. Then at me, and you know where the tea pitcher is. Thad let out a laugh. In my best Rodney Dangerfield voice, which was horrible, I replied, No respect. Mel walked back to the island and crossed her arms. Oh, you want respect? I'll give you some respect. Thad and Danny smiled. I said, Honey, can't you wait? We have guests. She snatched a scrub sponge off the island and threw it at me, as her face turned several shades of red, then left the room. Danny, Thad, and I sat and talked for a bit about Thad's adventures. He told us about his trip home and encounters he had had. The block, the tricycle, and some thugs chasing him down in an old Ford. Neither of us pressed him for details. He ended it with a description of greeting his family in the driveway of his house. After that, he was done talking. To me, Danny said, Damn, man, sounds like you had an easy trip home. Thad looked up, and I nodded. Hate to say it, buddy, but I didn't have nearly the trouble you did. One little encounter with some good old boys who tried to shoot down a couple of helicopters, but didn't work out real well for them. Then, I ran into some hippies in the woods, but they didn't bother me none. I knew your trip to Tampa would be worse than mine, but I had no idea it'd be that bad. Thad let out a grunt. The trip home wasn't shit, compared to what happened after I got there. He took a sip of his coffee and looked out the sliding glass door. Morgan, you know there's a dude in your shop? Oh, crap. I forgot all about him. Let's go outside, and I'll introduce you to Jeff. As we were standing up, a ruckus erupted in the back of the house. In a blur of flailing arms and shouts, they boiled out of Taylor's room. It's my turn! No, you just had it! I haven't used... The argument came to an abrupt stop when they noticed Thad. They stood there for a moment, staring at him, then looked at me, not sure what to think. Hi, Thad said, and waved at them. Danny whispered in his ear, and a big smile spread across his face. Thad looked at the girls and said, I think it's my turn, and held out his hand for the iPad. Suddenly, none of them wanted it. The two big girls let go of it instantly, leaving little Bit holding it. She looked down at it, then at Thad, then tried to hand it to one of her sisters, only to find they had both vacated the kitchen. Looking back and seeing they were gone, she quickly set it on the island and headed for the bedroom, shouting a muffled, You left me! As the door slammed shut. I doubled over laughing. Danny immediately followed my lead, and Thad started that deep bass belly laugh of his. We were still laughing when we went out the slider onto the deck. The door to the shop was open, and Jeff looked up. I introduced Jeff and Thad and told him a little about the walk home. Nice to meet you, Jeff said, shaking Thad's hand. Then he looked at me and said, It's done, and it works. Cool. You know how to use it? I asked. Oh, yeah, nothing to it. Jeff walked over to the laptop and showed me how to type a message in the text box. Just like texting. Just type what you want, hit enter, and it will transmit. He hit enter on the keyboard and pointed to a little gray box sitting beside the computer. It had two LEDs that started blinking. See? It's transmitting now. Looks easy enough. Later, I'll figure out what frequency I need to be on, and what to send, and we'll see if my guy is out there or not, I said. Sarge? Thad asked, with raised eyebrows. I nodded. Well, Thad, what's your plan? I asked, as I leaned back on the bench. He looked down at the ground. Don't really have one. I just needed to get gone. He didn't elaborate any further, but he didn't need to.
Let's go see if we can find you guys a place to stay.
Is there a deputy here named Mark? Thad asked.
That caught me by surprise.
Yeah, how did you know?
The sheriff asked me to turn over the truck to him.
Danny's head cocked to the side.
You met the sheriff?
Thad nodded, and Danny said, And they let you drive away?
Thad nodded again, and Danny raised his eyebrows.
Well, that makes it kind of easy. Let's go see him, and we'll talk to him about a house, I said.
We walked as a group to the barricade. The scout had been pulled in behind it, and Reggie was keeping an eye on it. As we walked up to the truck, Thad motioned to the log barricade.
Y'all need to do some work on this. Nowhere to hide.
Yeah. We've already paid the price for that, Danny said.
I've got an idea, Jeff said.
We're all ears, man, I said, and he told us he would show us later.
I looked over at Reggie and said, Hey, man, what was with the body on your four-wheeler earlier?
I'll tell you about it later. Can you drop by around supper time? He said.
Yeah, sure. Everything all right? I asked, and he nodded.
We got into the scout, and Danny directed Thad down to Mark's house. I was looking over the back seat at the guns. I said, You collected quite the arsenal on your way home.
He looked up into the mirror at me, but said nothing.
Mark came outside before we stopped in the driveway, holding his AR. When he saw Danny in the strange truck, he relaxed. If it was possible, Mark actually looked worse than when I had seen him the other night. After we all piled out and made the introductions, Thad told Mark that the sheriff wanted him to turn the truck over to him. Mark stood there for a moment, thinking, then said,
And you actually brought it here?
Thad nodded.
You two walked home together? Mark asked.
And Thad and I both nodded. Then Mark asked,
These guys staying with you, Morgan?
That's the other reason we're here. I was hoping we could let them stay in Pat's house. There's too many at my place to add Thad and Jeff.
For a moment, he looked shocked. Even Danny looked at me like I was nuts. I said, It's not like they're coming back.
Mark shook his head and let out a little grunt.
Yeah, I guess not.
Whatever, I don't give a shit.
And not for nothing, Morgan. But half the problems you got around here are because of the way you say shit like that. Something to think about.
I bristled at first, but I knew he was right. I wasn't sorry about what happened to Pat and her family, but yeah, some diplomacy might be in order.
We agreed to take the truck over to Pat's old place and unload all the gear. Then we'd bring it back. As Mark turned to go inside, he said,
Just leave the keys in it.
Then he went inside, the door closed with a loud thunk, and the four of us were left in the yard looking at one another.
Jeff looked over at me and said, I gotta ask, why aren't they coming home?
I looked at him for a moment, then looked at Danny, then back at Jeff and Thad.
They're dead.
Thad said, How'd they get dead?
Danny replied before I could think of anything.
Morgan shot him, right over there,
and pointed at the spot in Mark's yard.
Jeff said, Oh, those people.
He hadn't liked the story when I told it, and it looked like he was liking the idea of living in Pat's house even less. We drove the truck over to the house and unloaded all of Thad's stuff. Jeff said he would ride the scooter down later with all his stuff. Inside, the house was untouched, much to my surprise. The outside, on the other hand, had been stripped of anything and everything that could be used. The woodshed had been nearly full and now was empty. All the feed was gone, as were all the chickens. It was obvious that the place had been cleaned out as soon as we left that day. In the living room was a large stone fireplace, quite nice actually, and there was more than enough room for the two of them. I told them I would bring some wood down later, and for them to come to the house later for dinner. We'd have to figure out what to do about food for them, water too. Danny and I left them to settle in and walk back to his house to continue on our project. Back at Danny's house, we finally settled on a design for the stocks. We used a couple of 8x8s for the upper and lower sections and mounted them on 2 4x4 posts for the upright supports. A large strap hinge on one end enabled it to be opened. We cut the holes so they were snug on my wrists and neck. Since Danny pointed out, I had kind of a big head.
a hasp for a padlock, finished the piece off. It was getting late in the day, so we decided to finish it the next morning, and I headed back home. On my way back, I saw the scout was back at Mark's house. Thad hadn't wasted any time in returning it, and I knew that would go a ways with Mark. I thought about Thad's family, and that got me to thinking about losing my own. I pushed those thoughts away and focused on the practical things we had to deal with. Our food would go a lot faster with Jeff and Thad around, and I knew it was past time to start looking at the long term, something I should have done as soon as I got home. Thad and Jeff were coming over for dinner, and it would be a good opportunity to see what we could come up with. As I got to the paved part of the road, the sound of an axe brought me out of my thoughts. Looking off to the right, I saw the old man that lived there, I didn't know his name, trying to split wood. I wondered where his dogs were. They were usually out barking at whoever was in front of his place, but not today. The air was crisp as dusk started to fall, and the smell of wood smoke filled the air. It really made it feel like winter. Mel was in the kitchen again. Poor woman. It seemed like she lived in there now. I said, "Hey, good-looking. What you got cooking?" "Salmon patties, macaroni and cheese, and green bean casserole." "Damn, sounds good. We should have company over more often." "No, we shouldn't. I'm starting to get worried about food. Are we going to have to feed those two now?" I was thinking about food on the way home. We'll have to for a little while, but I'm going to start looking at some alternatives. She got a sour look in her face. What kind of alternatives? I just shrugged my shoulders. Whatever I can come up with. That statement didn't improve her mood any. That's what I was afraid of. Where are the girls? With her spatula in one hand, she pointed toward the door to Leanne's room. I found the girls gathered around the iPad still. It looked like they were drawing or something on it. They didn't even look up. Though little bit and Leanne did say, "Hi, Dad." "Hey, Taylor, when did you come home?" Without looking up from the iPad, she replied, "Earlier." "I know that. How did you get home? I told you to wait for me, remember?" She looked up at me, her mouth hanging open, then said, "Renee fell asleep, so I left." "And you just walked home alone?" "No, her dad walked me home." "Did he come up to the house?" This worried me. I didn't want anyone getting near the house right now. "No. When we got to the gate, he turned around and went home. He told me to tell you thank you for the food." She swiveled around so she was sitting. They were all crying and stuff. "Did they give Renee the insure?" "Yeah, they were giving it to her. She liked it a lot. Can I go back over there tomorrow?" Before I could answer, Little Bit piped up, "I want to go." Taylor looked at her with a scowl in her face. "You can't go. She's my friend." They began to argue, Little Bit complaining that she didn't have any friends to play with and was tired of being at home all the time. Taylor, being a typical big sister, didn't want her little sister tagging along. I'd heard enough, though, and said, "Knock it off. I don't want to hear it. You guys do what you're told. If you're told to wait for me, then you wait. If you're told not to leave, then don't leave." As I turned to walk out, Leanne asked, "When's dinner going to be ready?" "Soon," I said, as I closed the door. Passing through the kitchen, the smell was wonderful. Mel asked, "Are we stuck here in this house forever?" "Oh, come on. Not you, too. You know we can't just go running around." "I know, but I was thinking about my mom today." I looked over just in time to see the tears start. I had wondered how long it would be until she started to worry about her mom. She probably had been for some time, and I was only just hearing about it. I walked around the island to where she was and wrapped my arms around her. She wiped the tears from her face. "Babe, I'm sorry, but there's no way we can go to Orlando. We'd lose the truck on the way to either cops or bandits, and who knows what else could happen. There's just no way." "I know, but I can't stop thinking about her." I just stood there holding her. She knew there wasn't anything I could do. She just needed to talk about it. I really felt like shit, knowing there was nothing I could do about it. Her mom lived in downtown Orlando, and I mean right downtown. It'd take a damn tank to get down there, and once we did, we'd probably find she was gone. At least this way, she could think of her as she was, and not how we might find her. That sounded cold, even to me, but the thought of finding her mom dead in her house was worse in my mind than wondering how she was doing. That's the logic I used about my mom and dad, and so far, it had worked. They lived on the St. John's in DeBerry. I guess I could have gotten there on the river, but it was a long trip, and who knows what would happen. I just hoped the small community they lived in had come together. They were actually in a pretty good spot, so I hoped. I was stoking the fire when I heard Meathead start barking. I looked out and saw Thad and Jeff coming down the drive. Meathead was on the porch with raised hackles. I stepped out on the porch and waited for them. Thad was looking at the dog as he walked up. "You gonna eat me?" "Not in one sitting," I replied, and they laughed. "I think it'd take a herd of 'em to eat him in one sitting," Jeff said. "Come on in," I said. As Thad stepped through the door, he said, "Man, it smells good in here." "After dinner, we'll take a load of wood down to the house for you guys," I said. Jeff asked, "Hey, Morgan, you got anything we could use for light? It gets freaking dark in that house." I hadn't thought of that. "I have some oil lamps. A bunch, actually. We'll take a couple of them down, too." "That'd be nice." "He's right. It gets damn dark in there," Thad said, as he passed through the living room. "Evening, ma'am," he said, when he saw Mel behind the stove. "Hi, Thad. You guys get settled in?"
"We're getting there."
Jeff walked in behind Thad, trying to look around the big man. "Man, what smells so good?" Mel looked up with a smile. I was surprised at how at ease she was. Before, she had hated to have people just drop by. But then again, she hadn't been around too many people, and maybe it was nice to talk to someone, anyone, besides me. "Hope you guys are hungry," she said, as she took the last salmon patty from the skillet. "Oh, yes, ma'am," Thad said, followed quickly by an, "Oh, yeah," from Jeff. Mel called the girls out. Since Jeff and Thad were over, they had to sit in the living room, in front of the fireplace. The three of us guys sat at the table. Mel made plates for the girls, and they took them into the living room, and then she fixed plates for the rest of us. Once everyone had a plate, Mel took a seat, and we talked while we ate. The talk centered around my concerns about food. Now that we had even more mouths to feed, we needed to come up with more. I asked the two guys if they had any ideas. Jeff said he was clueless. He was from the desert and didn't know shit about what you could eat in Florida, except maybe alligators. Thad was a little more help, though he didn't think of anything I hadn't already, and didn't mention a bunch of things I was pondering. The result was that things were about to get serious. The menu was going to start to suck, and everyone was going to have to work to find enough food for all of us. There wasn't much more to say about it right then, and the conversation tapered off. Jeff brought things back around. "Mel, this mac and cheese is awesome. Is it from a box?" "It started out that way, but I do my thing to it. Gotta spice it up," she replied. "Whatever you're doing, it's working. I really like the breadcrumbs on top." Thad held up a forkful of pasta as a salute and grunted. I said, "It's great, Mel." I had to hand it to her. She did a good job on it. Mel had taken time to learn from some books like Making the Best of Basics, and had always written down recipes from a website called Hillbilly Housewife. The girls all came in about the same time, wanting more mac and cheese as well. Mel was eating, so I got up and spooned them each some more out, then carried the pot over to the table, where Thad and Jeff immediately set upon it. I watched Thad and Jeff as they ate, thinking about the pretty basic dinner we were having. I remembered the day we had found those cans of French fried onions on sale. Mel bought a bunch of them. It was a simple thing, one you wouldn't give a second thought to. But tonight, here, with a small group of people gathered around my table, it made a big difference. It made me think about what other things that we had acquired on a whim that would make a difference, be they food or something else. When everyone was done, I helped Mel clear the table. The guys offered to help, but I told them we'd get it. As I was setting the last of the plates in the sink,
Mel carried a stack of the paper plates over to the table. I hadn't heard anything about a dessert. She went to the fridge and came out with a cake, of all things. It wasn't very big, maybe even 11 inches square, but it was two layers and frosted. I said, "How in the hell did you come up with that?" She smiled as she set it on the table, to the obvious delight of Jeff and Thad. "It's a Coca-Cola cake."
"A what?"
"A Coca-Cola cake. It's basically a box of that Jiffy mix, and I use Coke for the liquid. The frosting is some of the Jiffy powder as well." Thad had a curious look on his face.
"Never heard of that, but it sounds good."
With talk of cake in the kitchen, it wasn't long before the girls arrived. Mel cut the cake and handed out pieces to everyone. Little Bit naturally wanted a bigger piece, or to lick the knife used to cut it, or to scrape the crumbs off the plate, or anything she could think of to get some more. I finally shooed her out of the kitchen so we could eat ours. I had never heard Mel even mention Coca-Cola cake before, but it was excellent. Once the table was cleared again, I sat back in my chair. Everyone was feeling fat and happy. "Only one thing could make this any better," I said, pausing for a moment, before continuing. "A drink." Jeff looked up. "I would kill for a drink." "Well, I have some medicinal whiskey in the shop, and right now, I think it would be good for my health to have a nip," I said. I went out to the shop and returned with a bottle of Jim Beam and set some glasses out on the table. I dropped some ice into each of them and poured a couple fingers of whiskey. Mel said she didn't want any and went to our room. The girls were gone to one of their rooms, so Thad, Jeff, and I sat there and enjoyed our Beam. The first one went down so well, we thought another was in order, so I passed the bottle for another round. Before things got out of hand, I suggested we go out and load some wood in the Suburban to take back to their place. We donned our coats and collected our weapons and went out to the woodshed. I grabbed the old green cart in the way, and we loaded it full of nice seasoned oak. While Jeff and Thad took it to the back of the truck, I went to the shop and grabbed a couple of oil lamps and 2 half-gallon jugs of oil. After putting them in the back seat, I grabbed a double handful of lighter wood from the old ammo can on the front porch. Fortunately for me, our property is covered in old lighter stumps. When my stash gets low, I just go out and cut about 1 foot off the current one I'm working on and split it up. I had been surprised to find a log almost 8 feet long that was completely cured into lighter wood. On a cold morning, or better yet, a wet one, it made it really easy to start a fire. After cutting the piece, I split it out into pieces about 1/2 inch in diameter and piled them into the can by the front door. A pile of pine needles and a piece of fat wood, and you had a fire in a matter of minutes. As I was putting the fat wood into the back of the truck, the old bell at the roadblock sounded out into the night. Jeff and Thad both looked over at me. "The hell is that?" "A little late for church," Thad said. "That's not for church. It's the warning from our barricade. It means trouble. We need to go out there and see what's up," I said, as I ran around the truck to the driver's side. Jeff jumped into the passenger seat, and Thad got in behind him. As I started the old Cummins up, we were in motion before Thad's door slammed shut. I flipped on the high beams as the old truck swung out on the road. In the light, we could just barely make out the 2 guys standing behind the logs. The fire in the barrel off to the right cast a yellow light on the bush, but I couldn't see anyone on the other side. Rick was at the barricade, along with one of the young guys from the neighborhood. On the other side was a group of 4 or 5 people. I couldn't tell if they were men or women from where I was. Stepping out of the truck, I was able to clearly hear the shouting. Seeing the arrival of the 3 of us caused those on the outside of the barricade to pause and exchange glances. Rick was crouched behind the logs with his carbine at his shoulder. He stole a quick glance our way, then quickly looked back at the group on the other side of the logs. The 3 of us approached the logs, spreading out across the back side. Thad had his old coach gun laid over his shoulder. Jeff didn't have anything in his hands, but I knew there were at least 1 and maybe 2 Glocks on him. I had my trusty old Bushy slung around my neck. I'm sure the added firepower got the visitors' attention.
"What's up, Rick?" I asked.
"I want my boy,"
a short, fat, pie-faced woman on the other side of the barricade demanded. Her hair was matted, and she was red-faced. In the light cast from the old truck, she looked really rough. Beside her was a skinny man with long hair. He didn't look particularly dangerous or even interested in being there at the moment. With them were two other men. Those two had rifles with them, lever actions of some sort. I looked over at Rick and said, "What?"
"She thinks her son is here or some shit, and wants us to bring him out," Rick replied.
"He is here, damn it,"